Welcome to Copyright Clearance and its podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, April 26th, 2019. Our weekly guest on the show is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer. He joins me today from the magazine's office in New York City. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So last week, we talked about the long-awaited appearance of the report from Special Counsel Robert Mueller on Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election. Expectations at that time were the book edition was gearing up to be a big seller for some publishers and bookstores. It's a week later now, and what do we know?
Well, short answer, we know that it's moving, though it's still unclear how well it's moving, as many publishers this week are still fulfilling orders. Scribner officials, who have prepared a version of the report with the Washington Post, have announced a big first printing, and Skyhorse, who got Alan Dershowitz to write a foreword, has announced a 200,000 print run, I think. That's a pretty big number. It may already be in stores now, but I think it was due to hit on Monday. And the ebook edition, of course, has been in the Amazon top 100 since its release last week. Actually, it's been in the top 10 in some cases, and Barnes & Noble was offering a free ebook edition for its Nook customers, which I think is an interesting strategy, and we can get more into the ebook edition in a minute. As we talked about last week, it is a government report, so it is in the public domain. Anyone can print and republish their own editions of the report, but as to how the Mueller edition in book form is faring, looks to be doing okay, but we'll know more next week.
So your colleagues at PW have already reported that readers aren't exactly beating a path to their local bookstores to get their hands on the title. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that's fair so far, which isn't to say they won't be coming into their local stores. I just think it's early. You know, the consensus we've heard from booksellers this week is that most aren't really ordering it in large numbers, and no one is coming into the stores to ask about it, though some booksellers say that they have indeed had lots of calls about the book and some foot traffic coming in asking for it. The question is, I think, as one bookseller correctly noted, is that will people, once they see it stacked up in the store, near the register, on a table somewhere, are they going to want to buy it then? But I have to say, it really is not setting up like a big bestseller, is it? You know, for one thing, the author, Robert Mueller, he is, shall we say, reluctant to do an author tour or really any media, though that could soon change if Congress demands that he come in and talk about his work. But right now, I think it's fair to say, despite everybody else on cable news talking about the report, Mueller is doing his best J.D. Salinger and keeping very quiet. And honestly, I think people have to be a little sick of it all at this point. You know, we've been hearing about this thing forever, and then Attorney General William Barr offered his little tepid review of the report, and now it's been just 24/7 cable news sharing all the good bits. So I think a lot of people feel like they don't need to read it, that they've already heard this. But I'll add this. I have been reading it, and I think people should read it. But the way that the report has been published by the government in its free form, it's almost designed like it's trying to keep people from reading it.
Okay, so let's dig in on that. As you mentioned, the report is freely available for download online from the government via the Department of Justice and the Government Publishing Office. And there is an ebook edition available on Amazon and elsewhere. So with all that availability, why do you think so few people will actually read what Mueller wrote?
Well, in a nutshell, it's not exactly being marketed, you know, and you can understand why, given how much deeply disturbing conduct is in its details. The government really, I don't think, at least for the DOJ, doesn't really want people to read very much of this. And it's heavily redacted. It's heavily footnoted. It doesn't look very good. But you know, the real problem is that the government has chosen to make it available in the form of a really bad PDF. Now, people can print out letter-sized paper copies, you know, provided you have a full-length cartridge and at least a ream of paper. But who wants to do that in this day and age? And it's virtually impossible to render on your phone because it's out in this really awful PDF format, which boggles the mind. It's 2019, and most people are going to want to read this on their phone. And that brings me to my big complaint here, and that's that the Government Publishing Office is only making the report available as a PDF too. Well, that's not exactly true. They are publishing a paperback edition of this as well. But I mean, the report was, I assume, born digital, right? It was probably delivered as a digital file. But even if it was delivered in print, they could have put some effort into it. They really didn't need to just put out a scanned copy of the print edition. The Government Publishing Office changed its name from the Government Printing Office in 2014, expressly to give the impression that it was more with the digital times. The GPO is under the legislative branch, and they passed a law to change it to the Government Publishing Office. And I dug up the press release from 2014, and they say the change was made to reflect, and I'm going to quote from the press release here, the increasing increasingly prominent role that GPO plays in providing access to government information in digital formats through the agency's federal digital system, apps, ebooks, and related technologies. But clearly, that's not the case here. You know, it's not that hard to prepare a good, readable ebook edition, and GPO does it for some of their publications, so I don't understand why not here. For most government reports, okay, not a big deal if you don't have a good ebook edition, but this is the most highly anticipated government report perhaps ever, and all we get is this PDF. So I asked GPO for comment on this, whether why they only did a PDF edition like this or whether they were planning on doing a real ebook edition, and they punted it back to DOJ. And in fairness to the government publishing office, the DOJ is listed as the report's publisher. But still, the GPO, like I said, is situated in the legislative branch. It reports to Congress. Maybe Congress needs to weigh in on this. But the idea that Congress has authorized and spent tens of millions of dollars compiling this report, not to spend the extra $1,000 or so it would take to make this really readable for the public, doesn't make a lot of sense. And then there's the point about the GPO deferring to the DOJ as the publisher, which I really have to question as well, because it's just odd that anyone is free to create their own editions of the report, to create a good ebook edition like Scribner has, and yet Congress's own shop at the GPO is going to let the DOJ call the shot here. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me either.
So is it possible, Andrew, that the GPO simply doesn't want to compete with publishers and booksellers?
It is possible, I suppose, and that could be cited as a reason, but I don't think it's a plausible one. You know, for one, they aren't, as we talked about earlier, they aren't publishing the report like we know publishing. You know, they aren't pushing this to bookstores or doing marketing and publicity. They're just putting a download button on a government website. But it's not really a reason anyway, because we should demand as citizens that the government edition be the most authoritative and the most readable version out there. Instead, what we now have is this multitude of editions, some of them framed or edited in a number of ways. I mean, right, we have the Alan Dershowitz version out there. You know, what's he going to say about the report? How is that going to color how people read it? You know, you can see the report already getting sucked into our media world. And, you know, you could see us getting like the Sean Hannity total exoneration version, or the Mother Jones, you must impeach now version. Or you have Barnes & Noble using the report as a way to push its commercial app. Audible, in fact, has, I think, a free audio book edition out there as a way to push its service. But this is our democracy. So to me, I just think that this demands more. It demands better. You know, no matter what happens to the president because of the facts in the Mueller report, for me, the report's publication has shined a light on how important it is for people to trust the source, to trust government. And the government is outsourcing the job here. Given that the federal government has declined to do the job properly, I now wonder if there may be a role here for libraries. And I know everything I talk about seems to come back to libraries, but bear with me here, because libraries are certainly going to be getting requests for the book edition now. So why couldn't a library organization or a library system produce a good, real ebook edition of the report and make it freely available through libraries via the Simply E app, which is now expanding, as we talked about last week? My point is that you shouldn't need a credit card to participate in our democracy when a library card should do the job.
And as for what is pulling people into bookstores this year, Andrew, PW's annual Summer Reads issue is out. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, that's one of our best features of the year, I think, because for me, it really highlights the wide range of talented people that I get to work with here at Publishers Weekly. And, you know, we see a lot of books here. The reviews department publishes over 9,000 reviews a year. And if you think you're overwhelmed when you walk into a bookstore, just think of what our reviews editors must feel every day when they walk into the PW bookroom. But trust me, it's a good problem for us to have. None of us are complaining. And once again, this year, whether you're looking for a beach read or something to expand your horizon, there's a stellar list on the PW site now, from personal picks in fiction, mysteries, thrillers, romance, science fiction, graphic novels, nonfiction, and even YA and children's books. So you can check out our summer picks now on the PW site.
Now, I did notice, though, that one name from the PW staff masthead is missing among those who made these picks. And Andrew, that's yours. So why no pick for you for 2019? And since I'm here putting you on the spot, do you want to make a pick now?
Sharp eye there, Christopher Keneally. You're right. I did not submit a pick to Summer Reads this year, and I was just having a really hard time making up my mind. I have a huge pile of books that I'm reading, and I read a ton of very depressing Trump books already this year, and I've got a few more coming my way. But in the end, I just couldn't bring myself to make a pick from the books that I have that fall within that summer window, which is, you know, May through the end of August. And you know, here at PW, I always read ahead. I'm terrible at parties because people will ask what I'm reading, and inevitably it's a galley of a book that they won't be able to buy for 3 or 4 months. But I'm going to make a call for a book that is out now, right here, since you put me on the spot. I'm going to point out Bill McKibben's new book, Falter: Has the Human Game Begun to Play Itself Out? You know, it was just Earth Day, so I think that this is an appropriate choice. It's not the feel-good book of the summer, as the title suggests, but it's the most engaging and important book that I've read in recent memory. McKibben is, of course, the author who 30 years ago brought the term climate change into the nation's sights with his book, The End of Nature. And 30 years later, in Falter, he reports things are, well, even worse off than what he and scientists were predicting back then. We've gone from a world in which climate change was a dangerous but somewhat abstract future threat to a world where it's now the overwhelming physical reality of our time. But the reason that the book is so compelling is that it's in 4 sections. And in those 4 sections, he does more than just look at climate change. He breaks down everything that's contributing to the place that we're in right now. You know, in that sense, it's an astounding work of social observation. I mean, who else would connect Ayn Rand to our current predicament? Well, Bill McKibben does in this book, and it's just brilliant. Everything is related: our politics, our technology, our cultural evolution, and it's all here in 4 parts in this book. And the more you understand what got us here, we have a better chance of finding our way out. You know, like I say, it's not a sunny, breezy summer beach read, but it's just a brilliantly written book. And, you know, while you've got me here, I'll make one other suggestion. I just don't want to overlook this. You should read the Mueller Report. I don't care if you buy it at a bookstore or download the PDF and slog through it that way, but it really is an absolutely astonishing read. A lot of people are going to try to tell you what's in the report, but I think every American should really read it for themselves, because the only defense to the kind of political malfeasance that we see manifested in the pages of the Mueller Report is going to be for people to get informed.
And keeping listeners informed on the latest insights from the publishing industry is what PW's Andrew Albanese does each week here on Beyond the Book. Andrew, thanks so much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming next on Beyond the Book, after the occupation by Islamic State in 2014 of the Iraqi city of Mosul, the university there immediately closed. When classes resumed, the study of literature and philosophy was banned, and many feared the chemistry labs would be used to develop weapons. The university library lay in ruins. ISIS has now been driven out, and the Mosul University Library has reopened, though it resembles a chunk of charcoal. Iraqis, with volunteers from Europe and North America, have begun to restore the devastated book collection. At the London Book Fair in March, leaders of that effort shared an update of progress. Olivia Snage, who reported on the meeting for Publishing Perspectives, recently shared with me details of the ambitious restoration project.
In London, at this meeting, there was a network called the Nahrain Network, which is an organization. I think they're at the City University of London, and they're helping Iraq post-conflict with the development of its and preserving its cultural heritage. And a person there had visited Mosul, and he said that having the physical books was so important because the internet was really still spotty. And he also emphasized the value of having new and current books, because while he was there, he saw that someone had donated a book, for example, on electronics that was from the 1980s. So, you know, this is really something that, you know, can't be emphasized enough, that they need current books.
Restoring Mosul University Library, next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.